Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts on the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. I'm Allison Klein, and today we're here with Steve Pawlowski. Steve, you're a senior fellow at Intel. What is the scope of your focus at the company?
Well, I have a fairly large group within the Digital Enterprise organization that does architecture and planning, not only at the component level, but also the platform level for DEG products. And we not only focus on DEG, we also work very closely with the mobility group because our processor architectures and our component architectures are so interchangeable that we have to have fairly close collaboration.
We talk a lot about Penryn and Nehalem architectures on ChipChat. We've talked a lot about the different platform technologies that Intel is driving. I would love your perspective on where do you think Intel's major architectural changes are coming in the next 10 years and where you think the most exciting areas of technology innovation are.
Well, at the compute side, we're going to be focusing on throughput computing. So TMG does an extremely good job making great transistors and giving us a doubling on a two-year cadence. And we certainly don't see that ending at least through the next decade. And so our job is to take great advantage of those transistors and bring the maximum amount of capability at the most stingiest power levels as much as possible. And so it's trying to focus on developing products that can meet the needs of those applications but can actually address a broader market segment. And at the same time, there's billions of dollars of legacy software out there that we still need to run and we still need to run well. When I go into customers and we talk about architectures, many core architectures like Larrabee and others, the first thing they say is, look, I've got 80% of my applications want to see a 20 to 25% performance improvement with every new processor generation. And if you can't meet that, then you're not meeting the needs of my market segment.
You just talked about many core and we just made the transition from single cores to multi-core. What do you think are the biggest challenges around transitioning to many core to the point of the Terascale model that we've talked about?
Software. Programmers aren't used to programming in parallel. You can either set up what would be called pragmas, which are hints to the compiler and hints to the computing model that, hey, this can be parallelizable. But most of us are used to programming in the standard von Neumann style of sequential programming. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in the universities to start training the next generation of programmer to be able to handle architectures of this magnitude and the number of simultaneous processes that can occur within a single chip. And it's going to be a drive that we're going to have going forward. We'll have to provide the tools and the capability for the software to help the programmer as much as possible. But in the end, the programmer needs to tailor their application and their problem set to be able to work on those architectures. The other challenge we've got is as we add more cores, the stress on the I/O and memory subsystems is very high. And so looking at new memory architectures and new memory technologies so we can bring the bandwidth and the capacity into these devices to be able to get maximum utilization and do it in a cost-effective and an economical way and still keeping power as a key hinge factor. And I/O is the same. I mean, roughly the standard rule of thumb that has been applied for several years has been a byte per second per operation. And when you put in devices that can potentially run a trillion operations per second, that says the memory subsystem has to be on the order of half a trillion to a trillion bytes per second, and it's just almost impossible to do that with standard technologies that we have today.
Now, we recently announced the QuickPath architecture for our next generation Nehalem platforms. Does QuickPath provide initial step forward in terms of I/O capabilities or system architecture capabilities, or do we even need to go further than that?
Oh, we're going to need to go a lot further than that. QuickPath was essentially an evolution of the front-side bus concept. We're still going to have to continue to push interface bandwidths to the point where we're running 10, 20, 40, maybe even 100 gigabits per second on a link basis, and that's getting extremely difficult to do in our standard copper technology.
So do you think optical is the direction that we need to head in, or?
I am probably one of the larger optical zealots within Intel, and yes, I believe that we do. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to have to start putting optical in chips right away. We need to start somewhere because the cost of optical is still pretty high. We have to generate light. That's not something that you can do in silicon and do cost effectively in silicon. Even though there's been some good research done in TMG, in components research, and within CTG, within their photonics research, getting the cost down is going to be an extreme challenge. And so we'll focus on some external interconnects like potentially USB, like PCI, interconnects where We don't necessarily have a significant number of links, so we can kind of keep the cost somewhat manageable on the platform. But we'll take those key learnings and over time drive them into the high-volume manufacturing space. And eventually, I'd like to move them onto the platform and chip-to-chip.
Going back to the parallel programming model, do we have anything within the high-end computing space that would give us some insight into how to approach this as we take this mainstream?
Well, we have fairly good threading tools and debug tools and capabilities that we've been able to use and move the software ecosystem forward as we put on multiple cores. And so as we have 4 cores or 8 cores, typically, we've got 8 threads per chip, or with Nehalem, that'll be 16 threads per chip. So we understand how to do a limited amount of threading, but, you know, threading is extremely difficult. When you look at the high-performance computing segment, like the people in the major national labs that work on these huge machines, they're used to dealing with thousands and even hundreds of thousands and on the order of 1 million threads. But they don't necessarily do multiple threads per core. They have 1 core and they run 1 thread on that core, and then they just have, you know, multiple thousands of cores, and that's how they do their expansion. And certainly the gaming industry understands how to program very highly parallel graphics architectures, and they understand that as well. So we've got a long way to go. I mean, our tools support a limited amount of threading, but when you really look at where the industry is going, and certainly in the capability we can put in these machines, supporting on the order of 10, 100, or maybe even 1,000 threads are something that we've at least got to have the tool support to do. And we've got a good start, but I think we've got a long way to go.
You mentioned USB and you mentioned PCI Express. The USB IDF recently announced USB 3.0. Do you see that migrating into new types of applications?
USB 3.0 has several interesting attributes. One of them is becoming much more aggressive in terms of power management, much more friendly in the power management space to handle the mobile and the ultra-mobile devices. And there's some other attributes like sync and go. And that's where really a bandwidth push really makes sense, because there are individuals that when you look at the standard model of I got to walk out the door and I want to download a movie that I want to play on the plane, if you use typical USB 2.0 speeds, that can take on the order of tens of minutes in order to be able to do that download, and we certainly want to get that down to some reasonable amount. Why I think that we need to start pushing on the bandwidth quite heavily and push beyond the traditional 10x and performance improvement, and why we said we would shoot for greater than 10x, is as I look out forward, I really don't see a need to do yet another version of USB anytime soon. So 3.0 is probably one of the last major implementations we will have on USB for some time. So I think this is our opportunity to take a really good look at USB and say, if we're going to live with this particular technology for the next 10 years, what do we want this interface to look like, and make sure that we've covered our bases fairly well.
In the PCI Express side, they also announced PCI Express 3.0. What do you see there, and what's driving that model?
Well, again, that model's really been driven by bandwidth. And there are always new features that we want to bring to the market space. And part of this would be some of the features that we have in Geneseo that would eventually get in there. But it's really adding the better capability from the I.O. subsystem, because the dependencies of the I.O. devices and what we're demanding of I.O. going forward, and actually pushing the bandwidth so that we can continue this treadmill of having more and more performance and meeting the performance demands of our I.O. subsystem. So as mentioned before, as we're adding more cores, we're putting a greater strain on I.O.
One final question. You've talked a lot about different technologies and different innovations. What's the one thing that keeps you up at night in terms of the major challenge moving forward?
Oh, golly, there's a lot of things that keep me up at night. quite frankly, the demand for compute is becoming insatiable. I mean, I can remember a few years ago where you know, I thought, if you can run PowerPoint extremely well, if you can run Microsoft Office and those other applications, why do you need a 4 gigahertz or a 5 gigahertz processor? So what keeps me up at night is making sure that we maintain these new computing models and we make them relevant on IA as much as possible. And it's my goal to take IA top to bottom and look at those opportunities where we can make IA as successful as possible.
Well, it seems like Intel's had a history of overcoming these types of obstacles in the past, and we'll look forward to hearing from you in the future on how you and your team chart the new direction for Intel. Thanks for being here with us today, Steve.
Thank you.
Join us next week for another edition of Chip Chat.